This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jenny hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Shadow of iron gates. A man tells us, please be patient for this kind of thing. There's always a wait, so we wait.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from beautiful Fort Worth, Texas, at beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studios. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com, or call me 817-733-5256. Come see the studio. Come record here at Trinidad. I'll help you do it. Or book Phil Pritchett and the full band, as so many have done. We thank you so much for that. Well, he has returned to us with the dark musings of a didactic. He's like a didactic prince, a dark lord of the music industry. Scowling over the proceedings with a furrowed brow. He is Kurt South, and he is here today.
Hey, hey, hey.
I'm a little disturbed, a little unnerved by what's been going on. He showed up in here in the morning. He immediately goes to the refrigerator and takes out a couple of beers. He plops down on the couch, and he's got to drive carpool for the kids here in a little bit. Very unnerving. Very unnerving. Just a bit. Only a bit. Oh, man. Good show last week. Good to have you back, kind of getting in the flow again.
Yeah, it was nice to be back in the swing of things.
We were joking. We were joking last week talking about, we're all casual sports fans here as well. Follow the proceedings of various teams and events. You watched the Masters. We joked about Tiger here on the show a couple times and the difficulties he has inflicted upon himself. Woods. So you being a guy who is no stranger, as we once said on the show, to getting the back window of your SUV smashed out with a golf club, and someone who upon something not going his way will fling something into the air and shout profanities.
Yes.
So you look at Woods out there at Augusta, whose emotions you just think, at last someone else is doing it my way out there at playing a major. So what do you stand on that, on Woods?
Well, I think it's a non-story.
Don't ask me how this pertains to music. It's what we were talking about earlier. What? Woods.
It does.
Scandal. What happens?
The scandal?
Well, just where is he right now in your psyche?
I
don't know.
I've never been a Tiger Woods fan, ever, from day one.
How can you not be a fan of Woods, though, dude?
I'm just not.
The greatness of Woods.
He's great, but I think he was built by aliens somewhere and dropped off in California or something. I like watching him play.
It's Tiger.
Elon, are you still mad?
I didn't hit it very good yesterday.
What I want out of my golfers, and you and I have talked about this at length.
Yeah.
To me, I love watching golf, and
my
4-year-old son loves watching golf.
Fans will know Pritchett's played a lot of golf, played at high school golf, been around the game.
I love the character behind the player.
Yeah.
In golf.
Yeah.
I want Fuzzy Zeller with a whiskey cocktail, making an inappropriate comment. I want John Daly.
Just slapping some gal in the ass as you walk in the next seat.
I want John Daly. I want John Daly showing up to the tournament still in his county issued jail clothes. I love those guys.
That's the game you long for.
What's great about these golfers is now it pisses me off. Yeah. Phil Mickelson's gotten buff and in shape.
I know.
He still has the sweatiest, most red face. He looks like he wakes up in the morning and just downs a pint of vodka.
Yeah, he goes out there and shoots 68.
But I like these guys because they're non-athletic athletes. Mm-hmm. And some of them are just funny. You know, I loved Payne Stewart.
Yeah, the characters of yore. Yeah,
man,
yeah.
They're just and something about watching golf just makes me feel. The Masters weekend is probably my favorite sporting event.
Man, me too.
The whole year.
We had a discussion about that. I mean, some guy, talking about with my brother and some friends. Just how it is riveting. No matter where you are on golf,
it's unbelievable. I love it. And Tiger ushered in this new era of player.
Yeah.
Where they were all just in shape. They were all kind of dressed
just
the same.
Eating a banana and they didn't
smoke just over there,
or something.
Yeah. I want the guy out there just. Yeah, I like Craig Stadler. He's just got cream gravy on his shirt and he's drinking a beer and missing putts and he weighs 300 pounds.
Throwing a club.
And I love that.
Well, that's kind of the thing. Golf forever was just for the randy outsider. I mean, forever. Oh, yeah. It was just a gamble. Back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, all the way, it was kind of more like being a pool shark or something, like Minnesota Fats or, you know, Fast Eddie like Paul Newman and the...
Yeah, they were all just, they were like gangsters.
The hustler. Yeah, they were just kind of, they'd hustle you, you know? Lee Trevino, he'd beat you with like a baseball bat and a ball. Like Tin Cup was, he was kind of a throwback.
Yes.
Costner, Tin Cup was a throwback to like what golfers were. And man, I'm a little saddened these days because you're right, man. Guys in the 80s and 90s that you didn't even think were characters, turns out they were. And the sports writer Dan Jenkins, was it Dan Jenkins? I think it was, a great Fort Worth sports writer. He said, man, I missed the days on the tour a few years ago and all the way back where everybody was somebody. I mean, it was just Chichi Rodriguez, Nicklaus,
Arnie
Watson,
Palmer.
Arnie Palmer, Lee Trevino, Johnny Miller, Tom Weisskopf, Payne Stewart, Fuzzy Zeller. Everybody had their own style, their own way of doing things. And now, man, you look at these leaderboards, and it's just, I mean, you got Tiger and Mickelson, and man, a bunch of great players. But man, you're right; they're all just thin. They all got their hat with their logo on it. They've all got perfect swings. None of them say anything wrong to the press.
Yeah,
and a blonde wife watching them, you know, and
that's they're all just a bunch of young robots.
Yeah, there's not a lot of. And it's not that they're not good guys and they're not great players, but there's not a lot of color out there. I mean, they showed some replays recently it was just something like the Shell Houston Open. Like, remember in 1993 Shell Houston Open, that playoff, and it was Scott Hoke, who's hilarious.
Yeah,
and he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, but. It was Hoke, it was Payne Stewart, and Greg Norman. And it was just an average tournament, but they weren't nobody. It wasn't like, oh, who's this guy? I mean, everybody knew all three of those guys. You're like, dude, those are all guys on the tour, you know?
Yeah.
But I feel like today you just get these guys, they're just nameless masses of dudes.
Well, and they all look like they could be either extreme sports guys. You know,
right,
or snowboarders or something, but they just happen to play golf.
Right.
But I'm kind of a snob when it comes to golf.
Yeah.
I like the player looking like he belongs at a country club in some way. And I like, I know that's one thing that always appealed to me about golf was it was an insider thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I always just pictured this guy in plaid pants,
mm-hmm.
just 11 cocktails in. With a stewardess in one arm and a stogie in one hand, in the other hand.
It's Raymond Floyd out there.
Yeah, just Raymond Floyd. You know, I don't know. But back to Tiger.
Yeah.
With Tiger, he kind
of... Well, isn't Tiger the biggest of all, it turns out?
Well, apparently
he
is.
How come we don't love him for it?
He's just a D-bag.
He's proven himself worthy of Kurt Sal's love and affection.
No, with all of his off-the-course antics. No. He's
in a... Look, he was in a drug-induced, maybe stupor, just beaten to a bloody pulp out there on the sidewalk. Hop full of God knows what. He's got women everywhere. I thought you'd love him for it. You say no. Why?
Why?
Yeah. You think it's all fabricated? It's not real?
No, I think... No, of course he really did all of it. I don't know. I think Tiger ushered in this era of...
Yeah, the robotic golfer.
Well, and everything is... He was just so programmed to be a certain way and put on a certain image and... You know, I mean, I think the way he did his family was the ultimate in sorriness, and I'm sure those old golfers were like that too, and I think that's sorry,
right?
But you know, all of a sudden, oh, I'm a sex addict, and I'm going to go. No, you're not. You're not a sex addict.
Isn't everybody?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, everybody has that, I guess. Nobody can keep their pants
that.
Under control.
Everyone's just like, man, Phil. If you felt like I did, you wouldn't be able to resist yourself. I'm just kind of like. No, I'm pretty sure I have the same impulses that you do.
God gave me genitals. yeah, that's what drove me nuts about the whole.
Yeah, if you all understood the way I really feel, then you'd understand why I'm just helpless in this situation. You know, I don't know.
That's what really drove me nuts about the whole thing was he was able to spin it into an illness.
Yeah,
you know, and well, I have the disease known as diddling, and I love to do pants activity.
Isn't that why we love the rock stars though, man? Because they were kind of like a Craig Stadler or a Payne Stewart.
Well, they were unapologetic.
They had styles. They were unapologetic. They were brash. And you know, golf and a lot. You just I don't know, man. You don't see that maybe as much. At least in golf, I feel like it's just not quite as colorful or something.
Well,
and you could argue in music to turn this into music. We kind of got on this talking about how the personality of some of these people are so contrived. Like to be a American Idol guy or something. Yeah, you can't be a brash nutball. You know, you've kind of got to play by the rules. You got to go on Oprah.
I think that Adam Lambert was kind of he's a
rocker. He's shaking people the wrong way, rubbing people the wrong way.
He's rubbing people the wrong way. No question about that, Pete.
Enough. All right. In our next segment, we're going to
talk. Adam Lambert, the Ryan Lynch of American Idol.
You know what? No. I'll tell you what, though, dude. The kids watch American Idol. I get into it. Man, I got to say that every week I was ready for Lambert to come out. And he was the best one on there, the most entertaining, for, in my opinion.
See, I was never entertained by him at all.
Really?
I just thought it was, it's like Lady Gaga.
It was just spectacle. I know, it's just, these other guys were up there singing, just da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, coming up, Adam Lambert, I was just waiting to see if he would just sprout wings and fly across the ceiling, or I don't know what he was going
to
do, you know?
He beats me to submission. He's just crying for attention.
Yeah.
Somebody in his past had boundary issues, now we're all paying the price.
Oh, boy, you heard it there first, ladies and gentlemen. Well, coming up here in our next week, there's some golf talk on the podcast.
We need more golf
talk. What's
happened
to the game? I mean, some of you guys out there learn how to play golf, man. Just get the beer gut going. Start smoking cigars. Just come out and just don't be sponsored. Don't wear a hat. And just go out there with some ugly clothes on and just beat the pants off some of these guys. Wouldn't it be great to see some guy out there?
That's what I want. I really want?
Just cocky, just throwing clubs.
I just want Davis Love to come back and walk out there and own everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
I always loved Davis Love.
Yeah.
Or Kenny Perry, just a hillbilly from Kentucky who can just whip you every way possible. That's what I like.
That's right.
Some guy who can do 100 push-ups and then, you know, he's peeling an orange while he's waiting for the next guy to play through. No, I'm out. I don't want you to do that.
Yeah, drinking herbal tea after the round to unwind. Oh, we're done with it. We're done with it. Well, we're going into our next segment here, folks. We're going to talk more about where music is today. Take Kurt South's racing nicotine-infused pulse on what is going on in the music business today. We're going to catch up on some Bob Lefsett stuff he's been writing about. Get you another beer in there. It's fine. Brace yourselves. We'll talk more about music business stuff with maybe a golf analogy thrown in there in the next segment.
Something good. Once inside, you'll find yourself saying, here comes the neighborhood. Behind the walls, the mansions, rises the water.
chaser thrills and destroys, so you try not to care and we wait outside temptation's gate.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Did you know you can get any Pritchett record you desire for just $4 at p2tunes.com? Or go to iTunes if you think it's easier and you want to spend the money. Pay for the convenience. Help yourself. We're serving it up there, everybody. Book us, 817-733-5256, or email me, Phil at philpritchett.com. Say, Phil, we're having this party. Come on, man. Bring the full band down. We'll show up. We can show up with one guitar. We can show up with a gigantic festival rig. Whatever your heart desires, we'll make it work. Those are the gigs we love to play, after all. Believe me, don't be surprised when I answer the phone. Give me a call. Well, Kurt South is here. Got into some golf talk there. Oh, man, Tiger throwing his clubs, trying to come back. You know, do we praise him for his audacity, or is he just a petulant child out there? We don't know. Kind of debating some of that. How it ties to music, it doesn't. It's something that was...
Here's the real question.
All right.
As Tiger signed his scorecard on Sunday.
Right. Then broke the pencil over his knee.
Was there a Hooters in Augusta, Georgia, where he walked in?
That's right.
And immediately found his next girlfriend.
That's right. Maybe he did.
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, you think so? Probably so.
No.
You know what's weird about Tiger, though, that just strikes me, I think, now that he's getting into his 30s and a little older. His dad has passed away. Now he's run off his wife. I mean, he had a bad day on the course on Sunday, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Who cares? Who can he call and get some sympathy and get picked up a little bit? We all need that in life.
You can call me.
Huh? No,
I'd
I'm
talk
saying,
him through it.
But, you know, I have a bad gig. I come home. My wife goes, oh, honey, it's not that bad. You're still great. And, you know, we all need kind of, yeah, I guess you're right. It's just one night. I mean, you need something, right? But, man, he comes home. I mean, he's just got – who's there? Who wants to hear about him?
I mean, he can't talk to a stack of $100 bills.
No, he can't.
I've tried.
Really? I
mean, it doesn't work.
Because none of those guys on the tour know him very well.
They probably
like
hate
him too much. Yeah. No, it's kind of said. His dad kind of raised him to say, hey, man, you're better than these guys. Go out and whoop them.
Yeah.
And he did that. And everybody respects him for how great he is, but I don't think he's made a lot of friends out there. Like,
no, I don't
and
think
Tiger
he's
And Tiger and I
alike.
Are dear friends and – he had a rough day out there, so, man, we went out and got a steak, and I kind of picked his spirits up a little bit. You know, players will do it. Well, I mean, guys are friends on the tour. You hear that those kinds of stories a lot.
Yeah.
But I wonder if Woods has – I know he hangs out with, like, Marco Mira. He's, like, 60 years old, old golfer. You know, but he doesn't –
I don't know. I
bet he's got a pretty lonely existence. I'm not trying to
– Does he call Butch Harmon?
Well, but Butch he's got Hank Haney now, isn't that his swing guy?
Yeah, that's a swing coach now.
But your swing coach, is that the guy he's supposed to – I mean, you're paying that guy.
I only talk to my swing coach when I'm getting lessons.
Is that right?
The only time I talk to
you
him.
You take some golf lessons?
Yeah, I've just got a full-time swing coach.
Oh. Well, man, what's your taking the pulse? You read all the Bob Leffsett stuff that I do, Seth Godin. Anything jump out at you? I fell hook, line, and sinker for his April Fool's joke the other day. About the Apple buys EMI. Did you see that?
I fell for it, too.
I totally fell for it. I was like, Apple bought EMI, man, the Beatles catalog, everything. They're going to sell it off for 10 cents a track. You know, this is the end of the world as we know it. I mean, the beginning of the new era is finally here.
Yeah.
And it turns out. He never even said it was a joke. I guess someone goes, no, man, I think that's a joke.
Yeah.
I told like 10 people. I had to call and go, oh, that was misreported. So it was pretty embarrassing. I was hoping it was true. But
Phil Pritchett, a fount of false information.
April Fool's, April 1st. But, man, what do you see happen out there? Give us a reading in Kurt South. Which way is the wind blowing, South?
I think the wind keeps blowing towards the great unknown. It's an abyss.
An abyss. Oh, God.
I mean, just, well, the labels that are left have less and less money.
Yeah.
There's fewer people getting signed. And if those people who are getting signed are getting signed to deals that, for the most part, only benefit the company unless they happen to sell millions and millions, which very few people are doing anymore.
Right.
It really, there's a lot of people out there just existing. Some of them are thriving. doing it their own way, coming up with their own formula. There's no music business for the most part anymore.
Right.
It's individuals. And you're in the Phil Pritchett business.
That's right. That's right.
I'm in the Kurt South enterprise.
Yes.
And that's what I tell people when you know, why do you feel about
the
music?
We're all a little cottage industry.
Like, man, I'm just my own little deal. It's just a little boutique operation, and I am the proud CEO.
Yeah.
And I make decisions that are often scoffed at, but so what?
Not by me.
No, not by you. But I just think that there's so much music out there now.
Right.
And people have to either stumble upon you or they're not going to find you.
That's right.
Because you can't tour enough to get in front of enough people. I mean, what are you going to do? Just, no, I'm going to schedule a U.S. tour, do 60 dates this year. Okay, who's going to be there?
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to know to pay the $12 to get in the door?
Yeah, who knows?
And, you know, and I talk to people all the time who say, hey, my buddy downloaded some of your stuff and turned me on to you. And that's just really how it happens.
Yeah.
That's it. It's, hey, a friend of mine turned me on to you.
Yeah.
And you hope that you can build enough mass to, you know, a compound and grow corn in your backyard.
I feel like the only thing I've seen recently, I talk to guys all the time in all various stages, just starting out, veterans. I feel like it's been very, very rough going, man, of late for a lot of people. I know there's always guys who appear to be doing really well, but even those guys kind of behind the scenes, at least to me, and this is just me giving you my two cents of the pulse here, with the exception of someone like Ryan Bingham, he's from New Mexico and lives in L.A. I don't know how much of a Texas. I mean, lived here for a little while, didn't he?
He lived here for a little while. He's not a Texas guy.
We kind of claim him like, oh, he's a Texas music Ryan
Bingham. Texas claims like, anyone who plays a show in the state and they decide they like
I got
him.
An argument with somebody the other night. I was like, he's from here, man. I go, dude, I think he's a New Mexico guy.
He's from Hobbs, New Mexico.
I go, man, he was in Fort Worth for a little while.
He never lived in Fort Worth. He lived in Stephenville.
Stephenville, yeah. I go, man, and they go, man, but he's made it. I go, man, he moved to L.A., I'm pretty sure. But that's a guy who's been rolling through and
but he's
packing
done it through,
in the blue light. You know,
he's done it through movies.
Sure.
As far as his real rise in national prominence.
Oh, there's no doubt. That one, especially. I mean,
yeah, I mean, that was, well, yeah, I say movie.
Yeah, right.
But,
But other than that, my point is, I hear about some young. There's always some young guy that he's packing it in, but you can kind of tell. You're kind of like, man, 5 years, he's not gonna be doing that good.
Yeah.
He's not a big talent or so. I don't know.
Here's what I see to be the issue.
Yeah, yeah.
When you hear about these guys who are quote unquote big or whatever and are doing big numbers, but behind the scenes you hear they're not doing well. Well, it's just like the problem that America as a whole is going through with the government.
Everyone's got a three-story house.
You start getting money coming in, and you spend it all. You've got a bus. You have a crew of six people who are all on salary. You know,
spend it all and more. Then you borrow X or you
run
up your credit.
Then all of a sudden, you know, you're drawing 1,000 people. And then you start drawing 700 everywhere you go. Well,
man, that's
huge
hit. I mean, it's still a big night. You're like, dude, that's less than 300 people per night on average.
Yeah, I mean, that could be $3,000-$5,000 that I'm not bringing in.
Right.
And, you know, I've got a $3,600 mortgage.
Sure.
And that bus costs $4,000 a month to go on the road. My road manager makes $42,000 a year.
Yeah.
It's just the problem with the music business is everybody who's in it wants to make it, whatever that means, so bad that they're willing to go to great lengths. Mm-hmm. To make people think they've arrived, whether they have or not.
That's right.
And those people who do thrive are the ones who don't care about perception.
That's
right. They don't care if people look at their crappy minivan and go, well, look at that guy. He must not be doing well. That's the guy with $300,000 in his checking account.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Right. That is one thing that I have learned.
There's no question about that.
You know, I mean, you and I sometimes pull up to shows in a rickety old SUV and people are like, oh, man, he must not be doing well. Or maybe he's the guy who has figured out that I'm going to trash this car pulling speakers in and out of the back. I'm going to have kids jumping all over the inside of it.
Yeah. And drummer throwing
I am
up in
not
the back
willing.
Seat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And instead, I'm maybe saving my money. because I know that it might not always be this good.
That's right.
But I'm always amazed that the first thing young bands do is see how much money they can. It's a race to see who can spend the most money on their album, on their van, bus, on their merch, all this stuff.
Yeah, road.
And look,
guys,
it's not going to last forever.
Yeah.
And at best, it's going to be a slow burn. Mm-hmm. That you're going to have 20 or 30 years where you're out there doing it, making a living. But you can't just blow your wad all at once. You
what
can't.
What did Lefson say in that recent? He went and saw James McMurtry out in L.A. somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
They were playing for like 120 people in a little club.
Yep.
McMurtry goes, man, for years I've been saying I'm going to get me a guitar tech and a tour bus. But, man, I've been saying that for 25 years. I mean, just – but, you know, he knows to clear that – I think the moral of the story is, if you say, man, all I want to do, Phil, is I want my job to be playing music. This is where it comes down to for a lot of people. They don't say they want to be rich and famous or something. Maybe that's what, but they say, man, all I want to do is do what you do. You know, Phil, I just want music to be the way I make a living. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's a lot of money, as long as I can get by playing music. That's all I want. Like, that's not that much. You know, they're not really saying that, but sometimes they can come across that one. Like, that's not asking for too much. And I think it's a hard thing for them to see, as it was a hard thing for me to see being young, is just what that looks like is just what you described. What that looks like is Alejandro Escovedo pulling up to the Continental Club in a 1988 Subaru, getting out of his car with an Ibanez acoustic and turning to the opening act and going, hey, do y'all have an amp I can borrow?
Yeah.
And, you know, and talking up the drummer like, hey, man, you want to sit in and play drums for me tonight? Because Escovedo's going to get $500 and he's just going to leave with it, you know, and pay
yeah.
that. You know what I'm saying? That's what it looks like. Now, and everyone goes, and man, that stops you cold a little bit. And I was in Austin early on and saw a lot of that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, because you kind of go, well, man, I want to play music for a living, but I don't want to end up like that. Like, but the truth is, man, that's kind of what it looks like. I mean,
yeah.
Short of, you know, Garth Brooks or something, you're like, well, man, maybe not that big, someone more in the middle. And then they start throwing out some names.
Like who?
I'm kind of like, now, wait a minute. You thinking that guy, how good do you think he's doing? Well, dude, he's got you a song on the Texas music chart. I'm kind of like, dude.
That and $6 will buy you a
Yeah, I'm just kind of like, dude. We played a festival with him the other night, man. There was 100 people there. Just, wow, well, man, I mean, he still got paid. I'm like, man, it's not what it seems.
To put it in perspective, what especially is going on in Texas.
Yeah.
That is very unique to Texas, I'll say. A guy like James McMurtry.
Yeah.
Who has been around 20 years?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Been on How and old off is he? Major league. He's
50s,
easily
53,
in his
54, yeah.
James McMurtry sells more albums than most any of these Texas guys who are on the Texas music chart.
And has more fans, right?
Worldwide. Look, I mean, he tours Europe. He does the whole deal.
Oh, there's no doubt.
I mean, McMurtry does real business. And McMurtry's not starving by any stretch.
Right, he does very well.
He does very well. But one of the reasons he does very well is he does not care. There's no pretense at all to James McMurtry. And so you take James McMurtry with all the business he does, and he is a business.
Sure.
He's making money. He
plays a lot of gigs.
Sells a lot of albums. Mm-hmm. And then you take some band that's in the top five on the Texas music chart, but they don't sell a tenth of the albums he does. They don't have anywhere near the audience. They don't do anywhere near the business that he does.
Yeah.
And they've got a bus and all the road crew and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
There's pretense and there's no pretense.
Yeah.
And those are the difference between the two. And if you are able to set aside all of that, man, I want to look like I'm big. I want to look famous. And look, I run into these guys all the time. And all they want you to do is think they're somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
They all want to think that. More than anything else, fellow musicians burn with the desire to have people know that they are
a
musician and I'm somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and the easiest, quickest way to make that impact is pull up in a bus.
Yeah, that's right.
And walk out with some sunglasses on and, you know,
the laminate around your neck.
Yeah, ask where the catering is. And look, if you're wrapped up in that, you have a 1 in a 1,000,000 chance to be doing this 10 years from now.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, get used to a life of poverty.
Yeah. Well, if you're rolling like that, you might not have much poverty in your future. But yeah, man, it is. It's a. But do you see anything in the business world, man? As far as, I don't know. Anything strike you recently about, I don't know, radio, iTunes, Facebook.
iTunes annoys me because they went up to $1.29 per track on major label releases.
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
I think iTunes is
trying to squeeze more blood from the stone.
Yeah, I think iTunes is a Band-Aid until something. iTunes isn't the end result. I think I'm with Bob Lessitz. I think streaming is the future.
Subscription
streaming. But look,
like basically Netflix, but for music.
Yeah,
you pay $10 a month, unlimited download.
The problem with the music business and why it's eating itself now is because you had so many people getting so rich.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just not a big enough pie to divide anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
And nobody wants to take a pay cut. So you can decide if you're an artist, for me being able to, because what everyone tells you, I just want to play music for a living. Okay, if that's true, then we're going to give you a living playing music. But you don't have a private jet. You can't dress like a maniac like Lady Gaga. And you can't eat caviar every meal. Well, I don't know if that's what I want then. So you have to get down to the people who really want to be musicians and really want to write songs and create.
I think this current economic situation, I think it is going to weed out those guys.
When they need to be weeded out.
The people who are, it will weed out people like, man, if you're not just in it for the, like, I was talking about David Garr's last couple of episodes, just playing the Granada. He's got his guitar. He borrows an amp. Same kind of deal. He's just throwing his new 25-song album off the stage. Just check it out. He's not going to do anything else, man. He's in it for the love of it. He's an artist. He creates stuff.
Yeah.
He's great. He may never be a household name, but he's going to stay in.
Yeah.
And the guys who just don't do it for those reasons are going to have to get out.
Well,
and that's comforting, I think, moving forward.
I think it is. And I think a good analogy for me is go see the movie Rounders with Matt Damon and John Turturro. It's about poker.
Right.
And John Turturro plays what they call a grinder. He's a guy who makes his living playing poker, but he never makes the big run, never tries to sit at the table in Vegas for the World Series of Poker. He just pays his bills, raises his kids off of what he makes playing night to night in these underground poker games. Hey, that's the music business. That's what I do.
Right.
I'm just creeping through the underground from night to night, come home, put it in the bank, and leave it that way, live a simple life.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the Matt Damon's character, who he just wants to make the big run. And you know what? The movie starts off with him losing everything he has.
Yeah,
he tried to make the big run.
Yeah.
And guys like him, they make fun of the grinder. Man, look at him. He's just going to be here for the rest of his life. Okay. That's what he wants to do.
Yeah,
that's who he wants to be.
That's right.
And you keep going broke. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you got guys who are always swinging for the fences. Man, my next record's going to be the one.
Make or break. Yeah.
It's going to put you where? Where are you trying to get to? What is it you want out of this deal?
Yeah.
I can sleep till 11 if I want.
Yeah.
How much do we want it to give us? You can only squeeze so much from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And even if you get to the top of the mountain, as we said in the last Bob's Cast podcast, there's no seating up there. You stand there, you look around, and you got to keep moving. You just go down the other side. It's just like you can't just stay up here.
Yeah.
There's room for
one George Strait.
That's right. Yeah.
And you know what? George Strait will stay where he is for as long as he wants to be.
Sure.
Nobody's going to knock him off. And he's one of the only acts in the world selling out stadiums.
That's right.
Yeah. And if you want to try to get to that level, man, go start scratching lottery tickets.
Yeah, right.
It's a better gamble. It's a better payoff.
That's right.
And you don't have to leave home.
That's right.
Really.
It costs you a lot less money.
But I think if you look at it from the standpoint of, man, I just want to do this, and I feel like I can have a fulfilled life by doing what I want to do and not having to maybe do things like my dad did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you can be rewarded for that. But the reward is just being able to do it.
Right.
It's not that. And it's like anything else. If you're done with your money, you're in trouble.
That's right.
It doesn't matter if you're an accountant or a musician or a movie star. If you're stupid with your money, or to use a biblical term, he who's faithful with little will be faithful with much.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So if you've got $10 and you blow it all, if I give you $1 million, you're probably going to blow it all.
Biblical wisdom from Kurt Sal.
There you go,
Take it for whatever it's worth. Very well said, my friend. Well, we're going to get into the vault section here. South is already making his way across the floor, rummaging through the vinyl records.
Actually, I was looking for another beer.
Oh, he's going to be... Okay, yeah, he's probably hidden one in there somewhere amongst the records. Just don't set it next to any of my valuable pieces over there. We'll be in the vault when we come back. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Call me and book the full band to come play wherever you tell us. 817-733-5256. Or email me, phil@philpritchett.com. Come see the studio. Take the free tour. Let me take you across the street to the Dixie House and buy you a chicken fried steak at least. Listen to you to play some songs. See if you want to record here. It's all up to you. We do it all. Make an album in a day, no problem. Spend a month on one song, no problem. We do it all. Kurt South is here. Mm-hmm. Didactic wisdom from the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for coming in, my friend.
I'm here against my will, honestly.
Guzzling a few beers, dipping a can of snuff, and just spouting off things in all directions. Wisdom left and right.
Polishing my shotgun.
What do you attribute recently, polishing your shotgun? In your tattered robe with your Carlo Rossi red wine. It's interesting in recent... a few years ago... I'll go on record. I'm going on the record right here. A few years ago, if I went up to anybody and said, hey, man, do you like the band? No one would know what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking 6, 7, 8 years ago. But in recent years, all these guys know who the band is. Everyone's into the band. Everyone's seen The Last Waltz. Why is that? Was there a big comeback? People know the band now. These young guys, they listen to the band. They got beards. You've seen them. Yeah. They all look like the band. They're all playing the organ. And you know, there's so much band stuff out there. Banjos and dulcimers. Right? Yeah. Did you sense that?
Well, I think you know, the early 2000s, the aughts, if you will, helped give rise to Americana music.
I think so.
When I was in college in the mid-90s, it didn't exist as a genre.
Yeah.
I think that had a lot to do with it. I think a lot of people who are already famous and influential have been citing the band as a big influence lately.
Yeah? Like who? Wilco's a big band.
Yeah,
band.
Wilco and Emmylou Harris and people like that. You know, Buddy Miller, all those people. Yeah. They talk about, you know,
the band.
And, you know, when I was in high school, the band was... very in vogue, the band, the Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw The Last Waltz back in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah,
it was a big deal. But, it's come back in vogue. Roots music is big.
Yeah.
I mean,
it really is.
You know, you got people like Gillian Welch and David Rawlings and people like that. You know, the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou brought it all back to the forefront. And T-Bone Burnett, you know, he's been a major player in bringing that kind of music to the forefront again. So I think it's just a cyclical.
Yeah.
Hey, we all want to be. We all wish we were from the Appalachian Mountains.
That's right, man. Just chopping wood and fixing a screen door.
Hey, if y'all want to really know what that's like, give me a call. Give me a call.
I remember in Elvis Costello in the late 80s freaked everybody out by growing out his hair, and he grew a long beard, and that was his reason. He just said he wanted to be like the band.
Yeah.
You know, he was tired of being the squeaky guy with the glasses, and changed his deal up, and people really freaked out about him. But that was sort of an odd. I was like, the band? Like, what? You know? And they have had a tremendous influence. yeah, there's something about it. It's kind of like we were talking about on a previous podcast. It gets mentioned. You do love those bands that seem to have that sense of unique brotherhood, unique creative. Well, you do know everybody's name in the band. Everyone contributes something so unique. You know, in like, you know, the Rolling Stones or Zeppelin or something like that. But the band, very unique as well.
The Bangles.
All the individuals make up the whole. But, you know, no one sounds like Rick Danko, you know.
Garth Hudson, man. Spinning his web back there.
Spinning his web on the Hammond organ and other things. Richard Manuel, Levon Helm on drums.
Levon Helm still
playing, yeah.
You know, Hayes Carl either just recently did or is about to do one of his Midnight Rambles.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
Really? In his barn?
My buddy Kenny.
Did you see Hayes on Imus the other day?
Haven't seen it.
It was on...
I heard it was pretty cool.
A month ago. Yeah, he was just sitting there at the desk, you know, and Fox News, whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't know that Imus did stuff like that, or is he just a big fan?
All the time, yeah. Imus always has music on.
Really?
I've seen Vince Gill and... you know, one day I was watching Imus, he was like, man, his producer said something about, man, that Reckless Kelly band keeps sending us CDs wanting us to have them on. And Imus was like, it's pretty good. You know, I'm not in there.
He wasn't sold. Reckless, yeah.
Yeah,
well, he's a big fan,
patron of country music.
Fan. Yeah, yeah.
But
that's interesting.
Well, yeah, I need to call my friend Kenny Smith, lives here in Fort Worth, plays drums for Hayes. I need to call him, get the lowdown on that, because he was talking excitedly about that.
Yeah, I think he played it solo, if I'm not mistaken, or he did lead one song. I didn't watch the whole thing; I just saw a little bit of it. But
the Imus thing,
yeah, it was interviewing Hayes, and so I don't know if he had the whole band there.
Yeah, it was a solo deal.
Yeah,
yeah, when he did that,
but it was pretty cool, man. It was. I'll tell you what, man. I think there is a lot to be said for a guy like Hayes Carl, is, you know, definitely a guy who does it. He's all about the music. You know, I mean, at least that's his.
Hey, the guy puts thousands of people in Billy Bob's, and he pulls up to there in a bus. In a bus. All you guys playing Woody's Tavern, pulling up in a bus. Take note.
He plays what? You pull up in a van?
He pulls up to Billy Bob's and plays for 3,000 people in a van.
In a van.
And then these cats pull up to Woody's Tavern or the White Elephant. In a bus.
In a bus. In a bus.
And they can't sell it out. Yeah. Hayes is doing it right, people.
Yeah. Hayes is, man. He's kind of low-keyed guy. But I do think there's something, I don't know if it's a trend, I don't know if you call it a trend, but, you know, with maybe Bingham and Hayes, some of these Americana-type guys, because, man, people, I know country still sells and stuff, but people don't really buy into these. Guys like us aren't going to be just big Lady Antebellum fans or anything, I mean.
I don't know, they're pretty good. Yeah.
I spoke too soon. but there's...
For what they are,
well, there's definitely, but there's definitely kind of a pop... Americana element to what they're doing. It's not just down the middle skronky bonk, you know what I mean?
No. I mean, it's not Trace Adkins. Look, unless you're just... There's only a certain kind of person that is into that stuff.
Yeah, right.
I mean, and they're not looking for music to do much for them except...
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. So was the band... Was this their first record? The band, was it their second album?
I thought it was their first.
There's a music from Big Pink, their first album.
No,
I have to check the record on that. Oh, man, there's people out there just screaming at their
iPod
right now. Yeah, I don't know. The band. The one where they have the beards. I'm just kidding. They all got the beards. What is it about the band for you, man? The brotherhood, the earthiness, the hair. What?
Look,
the suede, the leather.
Everybody wants to be the mountain man, I think.
Yeah.
It's part of
it's
it.
It's kind of a man. Yeah. Yeah.
But they're it's cosmopolitan, yet it is bucolic and rural.
All right, you lost me there. You lost it. Catch it, fans. Lean forward.
Get a dictionary. Look it up.
All right.
Gosh, come on.
It's bucolic.
We're talking to an educated.
I know we are. I know
uppity
we are.
Audience here. They know what I mean.
I just felt like I was taking an SAT test there for a minute. Wow. Just like a flashback.
875 on the SATs for Phil Pritchett. I think they have.
Robbie Robertson, he's a squeaky clean Canadian. Come on. How'd he fit into this whole deal?
Well, the way to hear Robbie tell it, he was just obsessed with the American South and
the Civil War and all that.
You know, he wrote "The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down," which is
on this record,
fairly historically accurate.
Yeah.
Song, you know, and it references my homeland, so I feel very I feel connected to that song.
Right, sure. That is weird that he would write be that into all that stuff.
But man, the whole Americana and country music revolves around a very small geographical area.
Yeah.
People are obsessed with the South.
Yeah.
And for good reason they should be. Go spend some time in Michigan. See, it's not that cool. Just kidding. Just kidding, all you people up there.
We love you, Detroit.
We love you,
hello.
Detroit. Give us a call. But, you know, it's easy to become enamored with that part of the country. And
a lot of romanticism.
Hey, rock and roll, country music, it all came from there.
Jazz, you know.
Jazz,
New Orleans. Yeah.
It all came from a relatively small area.
Right.
And, you know, a guy like Robbie Robertson up there in Canada, which Robin Williams said great about Canada, it's like living in a loft above a great house party. But
That's good.
You know, he's this Canadian guy, and he comes down and he gets to see and experience these places where this music came from.
Right.
And he did his research, did his homework, and combined that with his musical ability, and was able to come up with some pretty believable stuff. It's kind of like John Fogerty.
Yeah,
they're all from California.
Yeah,
but they were
writing about the bayou,
writing about the swamps of Louisiana. Sure. You know, how do they know anything about it? Well, they went and found out, and they. You know,
or
they,
Clapton, you know, an Englishman digging out the blues. You know, they were searching
they channeled
out
it. They channeled
Robert
it,
Johnson.
And they did it well. And you know, now I've heard Robbie Robertson say that Levon Helm helped him channel that music, because Levon Helm was the only one from the South. He was from Marvel, Arkansas, which is up there in the.
Where were all those guys from? Hudson and Manuel, and were they all Northeastern guys?
I think they were all Canadians as well, weren't they?
Oh, were they some? I'm not sure. Were they from? Were they from the Woodstock area? Some of them.
I don't know.
But they weren't Southerners.
No, Levon Helm was the one guy who was really a Southerner, and you know, he kind of helped Robertson.
Yeah.
Really know what the. But the whole deal with the band was, as Levon Helm has said before, is it was kind of like the traveling minstrel shows or medicine shows of my youth, being put into rock and roll and pop music, where it's just, you know, we're all up there switching instruments, and it's this real earthy, organic thing, but we're able to put it into to a context that can be sold to an audience, you know.
Right.
And I think that's what's cool about the band is it's still a rural, earthy kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's kind of heady at the same time.
It is. That's right.
And that's the appeal. Right. All kinds of people can get into it. You know, they're not playing the band at you know, dance halls and stuff.
Right.
I mean, it's not two-step.
But it's definitely they're definitely a band that a lot of Southern, you know, hardcore dudes are going to get into, and it's also something some heady musical snob from San Francisco could be all about the band.
Yeah,
too.
Absolutely.
It's very unique in that way.
It's not
regional. Maybe that's got something to do with the fact that they're from all over. They're not all from there, or they'd be maybe harder to branch out. You know?
Well, I think sometimes the people who are from the South who do try to put that into their music
and just be the South, it's off-putting in some way.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah. I think their outsider's perspective helped a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're going to really tell a story, whether it's about the South or wherever it is you came from, or a story about anything, being understated and efficient and not beating people over the head with it is the best way to really paint the picture.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, you got, you know, Jason Aldean and guys like that just, I'm country and I'm from Georgia.
I'm just eating chicken and
whatever. Dude, who cares? You're trailer park. We're going to divide you over here.
Yeah.
And there's a big difference between what the real South is like and that crap. Because that's what all the people who've never been to the South, who live up north, that's what they think of. It's a bunch of guys with black straw cowboy hats eating fried chicken.
But it's also where a Canadian like Robertson seeks out the musical roots and the history and the heritage and brings it into something, you know.
And I think that's something that is important for being someone who grew up in the old South, what I call the old South. But I've lived in Texas a long time, and I have half my family's in each one. A lot of people in Texas, I don't think, really grasp what happened east of the Mississippi.
Yeah.
And I think that's to their detriment sometimes, because Texas is its birthplace of its own kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, man,
we talk about fighting Mexico, you know.
But east of the Mississippi, man, Memphis and Nashville and the mountains of North Carolina and the Delta of Mississippi, man, that's where it all went down.
Yeah, yeah.
And they wouldn't have had anything to sing about in Texas if it hadn't been for all that stuff.
Right, right.
And if you leave out that part of musical history, then your well's not going to be deep enough, and you got to go find out about that. And that's what Robertson did, and you know, and he built a career off of it.
Sure.
You know, and I... That, to me, that's what's cool about the band. That and just, they also, their stories personally were tragic and crazy.
Interesting, yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, I mean, Emmanuel died in a motel room in Florida.
Yeah, and you know, Danko died.
Hanged himself, didn't he? Yeah, and
very
you know,
tragic.
Robbie Robertson and the rest of the guys got in a fight over royalties and sued each other. Mm-hmm. And
it was a mess.
You know you're successful when you're suing your former friends.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, I filed suit in Tarrant County Court this morning against one P2 Pritchett.
What? I haven't been served with any papers. I haven't heard of this.
I just filed them this morning.
Oh, really? On what grounds? What's the charge?
Just unpaid royalties.
Unpaid royalties. Okay, I understand. I'll write you that check for 75 cents. What you have heard today, folks, in the P2 podcast here in the vault on the band is Kurt South on the South. Right there. It doesn't get any fresher
perspective than that. Hey, I still tear up when I sing The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down.
I know, just weeping. Just, you should have seen Kurt. We went out and played in North Carolina talking about the South with those guys and, you know, pork barbecue and all that stuff. It just went on and on. Ham and, oh, geez, yeah. The great stuff, man. Kurt South on the South. Who better to share it with us, perspective
right.
on the band? Well, thanks for being here, South. It's been too long. Thanks for coming.
It was fun. I feel better. I got a lot off my chest.
Check out the band, man. It's all out there. Watch The Last Waltz. We've done The Last Waltz here in the vault before. Well, call us always, folks. 817-733-5256. Or email me, phil@philpritchett.com. Come see the studio. Record here, whether you're a big-time, you know, major label act or just... some guy who can barely sing who wants to record a few songs. Just
hold on, Darius Rucker's calling my phone right now wanting to record
here
in Trinidad.
Tell him hello for me. Tell him hello.
Tell Hootie I said hi.
Tell Hootie hello. One of the South's best. Well, call us. Enjoy the week, everybody. We'll see you next week on the podcast. Until then, take care.
'65, we were hungry, just barely alive. By May the 10th, Richmond had fell. It's a time I remember oh so well. The night they drove old Dixie down, and the bells were ringing. The night they drove old Dixie down, and the people were singing. They with my wife.